Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public service professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Phil Beverly, Jamal Cole, Ray Hanania, and Mike Miller. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. Want to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo. And you can join us on the World Wide Web, audio and video, not only tonight live, but throughout the week at beyondthebeltway.com. Well, this is the first week of the Trump administration. We could probably do about 5 hours just on everything that's happened this particular week. Around the country at this moment, there are protests at major airports protesting the president's executive action announced last week on banning some refugees and also a travel ban from certain countries. And by the way, just to put it in context, the travel ban that is in place affects these following countries. They include Syria, Libya, Sudan, Yemen, Somalia, Iraq, and Iran. It is a 90-day ban. Then, in addition to that, there is a 120-day ban on all refugees coming to the country. I want to get everybody's reaction. There's lots going on again. Protests in the street. Federal judge in New York yesterday put a stay on some of the deportations. A lot of confusion. It probably could have been handled better. We're going to talk about that as the program unfolds this evening. But I want to look at even a bigger issue. And I'm going to start with you, Mike Miller from DePaul University. It seems to me that those that are protesting, whether it's on the streets or in airports or the national news media, or if you look at Facebook or anybody Facebook, the back and forth conversation, there is a level of hysteria that's going on in America right now. Is there a way to get beyond this hysteria?
I wish I knew. I absolutely agree with you. I was wondering tonight exactly which direction we would go, and part of it is when I hear about the stuff over the bans on refugees, I don't trust the media to tell me. It's like they have become hysterical. The people have become hysterical. They're drawing conclusions which are preposterous. And I don't understand why the emotions have gotten the better of their intelligence.
Phil Beverly, you're from Chicago State, veteran member of this panel. You've been involved in a lot of heated conversations on this program, usually with a level of civility, which I've always appreciated. But are you worried about where even the civil discourse might be going?
I don't know that we have civil discourse on this. And no, I don't trust the media, and yet where else am I going to get the information from? I can read the executive order for myself, but there's other information that needs to come out. That they're using anonymous White House officials to explain it after the fact is a little disturbing to me. Let's not, at the beginning of this administration, use the ready, fire, aim method of governance. Let's be a little bit more measured. This is not a corporation where you're in charge and you just get to decide. We have things like due process, for example, and make sure all these policies get vetted so it'll prevent this hysteria that could be encompassing the country.
Ray Hanania, you've been on this show for many years. You are a recovering journalist. You're a columnist. You're a comedian. You've written numerous books. You were a Palestinian Christian.
Still am.
And also, by the way, the last time you were on this program, and there weren't many, you predicted that Donald Trump would be elected, and everybody else sort of fell off the chair, except myself, because I had agreed it as well.
Except you.
What's your answer to the question about hysteria? Because in following your Facebook, you've been defriended by a lot of people because of, and my reading of you, your points are being somewhat objective. I don't necessarily see you as a partisan on the other side.
Well, there's a reasoning behind what Trump is doing that's lost in the discussion and the debate. And I don't even think it's a discussion. It's people yelling at each other. It's protesting. You know, when you look at the seven countries, take out Iran. I don't know of any Iranians who have come to the United States through immigration process. I know that if I wanted to go to Iran, they wouldn't let me in. Okay, so let's leave Iran to the side. You look at Iraq, Syria, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen. What do they have in common? You know what they have in common? Dysfunctional governments. Iraq is really three governments. None of these Sudan is a mess. Syria is a mess. Iraq, we destroyed it. This country destroyed it. And they have no immigration policies in place. If you're a terrorist from Saudi Arabia, from whatever country, it could be an American country, it could be wherever, you want to come into this country, you would go through one of these failed states and easily enter the United States.
I want to follow up on that, Jamal Call. I want to bring you into the conversation. You're a community organizer. You're author of a book called The Torch of Decency. We'll talk about that as the program unfolds. What's your issue is violence in the city of Chicago. That's what we're going to talk about as we get later in this program. But what do you think about just the issue of the ability to have a civil conversation about very complex and very emotional issues?
I think people protest and they march when there's an inadequacy with an institution with power, and not only a power but a mandate to function in a particular way. And I think right now the integrity of our country is in question when President Trump is being very divisive. But I think President Trump and his appointees are temporary, and I think the real power is always going to be with the people, not only in Chicago.
Tell me, in your view, what is divisive about what he's doing now?
Well, there's always going to be people that want to separate others. That's good if it brings people together. That's divisive if it divides people. When he says he wants to put up a wall, that's a barrier between the United States and an entire other country. That's not taking into account the many the children that live in Little Village, that live in Pilsen, that might be here going to school in Chicago. He's not taking their feelings into account. So I think that's.
But is there or should there be? And we'll get into a broader discussion. A common denominator of laws. We have laws. Laws should be enforced. So if you come into this country illegally, you are breaking a law. And there was an election about that. There was a clear division between what Hillary Clinton wanted and what Donald Trump wanted. And the Electoral College majority states, they voted, they want Donald Trump to do basically what Donald Trump has been doing this week.
Exactly right. And if you look at immigration law, I don't know it real well. I just know it is much more restrictive than people think it is, because we have been unrestrictive in our application. Most Americans simply say, we love immigration, so let's just turn our back when it comes that some people come in illegally. Our immigration laws are very tight, just like most countries of the world. And I think of what Mr. Trump has essentially said is, I'm going to enforce these. Mr. Obama did not, and part of these executive orders is to simply undo what Mr. Obama did. And now he's saying to the border guard, you're going to enforce the law as written. And that makes it much harder for people to come in.
Yeah, the Department of Homeland Security didn't even know they were supposed to be keeping statistics on illegal immigrants that create crimes in the country. I want to go back to something you said, Ray. We mentioned the seven countries. When we come back, because on the opposition, much of it from the journalists this morning, they were always including Martha Raddatz. She was basically, well, why are there only seven? Well, the administration was announcing these are the seven countries that were identified by the Obama administration. They've been approved by Congress, so that's why these seven were selected. And then the other question is, well, what about the others? What about Saudi Arabia and what about Pakistan? Why are they not on this list? When we come back, we're going to ask the question, should the list be expanded? Back shortly.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school. Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. The seven countries that have been selected, just to repeat, the Trump administration said they're the same countries that were identified by the Obama administration. And a lot of the opposition is saying, "Well, why only those seven countries? What about Saudi Arabia? That's where most of the 9/11 hijackers came from. What about the UAE? What about Pakistan?" Phil, what's the answer to that question? Should they be on that list?
If we're going to make a list, yes. And I'm actually more worried about homegrown terrorists in Belgium and France who can travel on a Belgian passport and not get flagged to come over here.
Are you suggesting then that we expand it to European countries?
Oh, that would be very interesting, but it wouldn't happen.
No, but I want to talk about this. I want to talk about this list.
Yeah.
Because when I was listening to it was mostly the reporters today that were all saying, "Well, why is Saudi Arabia not on the list?" I guess I agree with them. Why isn't Saudi Arabia on the list? And by the way, it wasn't on the list from Barack Obama, and neither were the other countries. So is seven enough?
You've got to recognize, as Ray said, all the others are failed states. Do you believe for a second there is a database that they could turn to figure out where Abdul, to use the name we were just talking about, where that person comes from and what their background is?
How about Afghanistan, though?
Right. I do agree that Afghanistan could be an issue. But in 2 months I'll be traveling to Bahrain, where I teach in our MBA program. I'm sure the government knows everything about everybody. So if there was some kind of vetting, we would actually know through their government who they are. Do they have a driver's license? Did they go to school? What's their profession? All these things would be known in all the other Muslim countries. So this is not a ban on Muslims. This is a ban against failed states whose people were trying to come to the United States. And we can't tell who they are. Even if you really like immigration, which I do, that does not mean that every single immigrant is good. And you want to figure out which ones do you want and which ones do you not want. And you can't do that with states which have no record of these people.
Now, where you disagree on this point, you disagree, and I think a lot of people do, on the green card. In fact, this afternoon we should mention that Bob Corker from Tennessee, who's the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, he basically said that the president should relook at this issue, look at the green card issues.
I think Trump Lindsey
Graham and John McCain, not unexpectedly, they have denounced this plan, and then the president already, you know, took a swipe.
I think
them.
They backtracked a little bit on
the
that.
Green
I think
cards.
That on the green card thing.
Yes,
they're using a different
Rance Priebus
description.
Did it today.
Right, he did, and that was the one issue I thought, okay, that's odd. But let's take this back a step, because I think the real issue, honestly, is racism in the media. And here's how it is: here you got the media saying that they're banning Muslims, because this idea that they're banning Muslims didn't come from Trump. It's from the media interpretations and reporting of what he's doing and what he said.
Right.
They take things out of context. And then the media this morning says, well, why aren't they including more Muslim countries on the ban? I'm going, wait a minute. You're just complaining about banning Muslims. Now you want Saudi Arabia on the list. You want Jordan on the list. You want the United Arab Emirates on the list.
There are 40 Muslim countries that are not on any list.
There are 50. Right. There are 50 Muslim countries. Seven of them are on the list. And in my opinion, they're on a list that has nothing to do with religion. If you put Saudi Arabia on the list, it becomes about religion. But there are 50 countries. Seven of them have been targeted because they have terrible governments. You cannot trust their immigration process. But now, Trump has not explained it properly. He hasn't explained that. He's allowed this to be characterized by the media, and I think the media should be more responsible, because when we talk about racism on the South Side and all over this country, let me just make this one last point. Who do you think has been fueling anti-Muslim racism? Who do you think that attacks me because I'm a Palestinian? Do you think it's you or anybody at this table? No, it's the news media. The news media has fueled hate against me. They've fueled hate against Muslims. They have fueled hate against Arabs, and they lock us out. And then suddenly, when it benefits them, they start pretending like they care about us.
One thing
they don't.
Mike. I just want to add one thing. I had last year I read about terrorist incidents in the world, and the list for 2015, I believe the number was something like 458 terrorist events, of which 456 were Muslim-related. Only two were some other activities that didn't involve Muslims. These are the bombings of church, of mosques and so forth. So the idea that the people that you might want to be giving vetting to might happen to be Muslim might be because of all the people in the world who are committing most of the crime called terrorism, they happen to be Muslim.
We've been conditioned.
But the question is, ahead, where Phil. Do they come from?
I mean, those
bombers in France were from France.
So are we going to now do
extreme vetting of French passport?
No,
I agree with you that a bigger problem is homegrown terror. I agree with that. But there's an issue here is, first of all, the way I look at it, there's a problem. The first thing you do is shut the door.
Yes.
You shut the door.
Yes.
And it's not for 90 years. It's for 90 days.
And you make them come in the front door.
You make them come through the front door after their papers have been checked,
exactly,
and you
right.
do a little vetting on it.
You don't let them climb over the fence.
Does anybody know what do you think vetting means? Do you believe when Dick Durbin goes on television today and says, well, you know, the vetting program we have in place really works? Mm-hmm. Explain to me how you think it works, Jamal.
I don't think the police officers in Chicago can properly vet anybody on the south side of Chicago. So why should I trust the federal level government to be able to vet people coming into this country? When they see me in my hoodie, they assume that I'm a criminal and I can have insurance, and they'll still throw me on the ground, take me out of the car. So I don't put my trust into federal government. And when it comes to terrorism, you know, before I get to terrorism, I really think about just last week, a freshman kid was killed on 69th and Halstead in front of Kasane Cafe. I mean, before I think of, terrorism overseas, I think about what's impacting my community,
right,
and what can we do about that.
Here's one of the things that scares me about these bans. So there's a 120-day ban on refugees.
Right.
Does that somehow suspend their experience as refugees? If suddenly something in Syria disintegrates and you're talking humanitarian crisis, we just go, oh, no, we got a 120-day ban. You just might die. That's a problem for me. Another problem for me is there are Iraqis, and I know Afghans, who worked for the U.S. government in our invasions there, who now are being kept out at their own peril because they worked for us.
There were, trust us, we'll look out for you. There were a couple of high-visibility incidents that appear to have not been handled well. But again, I think in listening to the administration on the various shows today, they made a point, and I assume this is true, maybe not. Yesterday, 325,000 people were coming to the United States from foreign lands. 325,000 people were trying to get into the country just yesterday, mm-hmm. and 300 plus of them have been detained, and 109 have been questioned again, and that has kicked off all of these protests all over the country.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
Businessmen and women coming all the time, and they come into the border with visas and so forth with no problem whatsoever. I'm just astounded at the reaction over so few people.
Let's go to Richmond, Virginia. Paul is listening to us on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Go ahead, Paul. Nice to have you with us tonight.
Gentlemen, it's great to be with you. This is my first time calling into the show, but it's a great show.
Thank you.
Listen, the bigger issue with this and the sudden list is not the fact that they're failed states, because actually about a year ago, the United Nations and President Obama actually restored Somalia as a non-failed state. That doesn't make them, you know, as great as England, obviously, but they've been removed from that list. But if you look at the reason why Saudi Arabia is not on there and the United Arab Emirates, it has nothing to do with the business dealings. It's a proxy situation that we have in the Middle East. I had just come off deployment recently near that battle group had been fired on in the Red Sea, and I can tell you that is going to be the biggest strategic interest in keeping Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates there, because they're keeping a lockdown on that entire region. And they're very important in keeping Iran in check. And that's mm-hmm. the biggest play here, is that you got to keep Iran in check as well. So it is a little bit of, it is a little bit, look at my left hand, you know, I'm going to slap you with my right. However, you've got to take into bigger consideration here, and I really think that that's what's in play.
Paul, let me ask you a question, because the critics have said that this move is going to make those around the country who hate us more because we're doing what we're doing with these seven nations that happen to be Muslim, although they are, as we say, failed states, and there's more Muslims countries that we haven't done a damn thing with. What's your reaction as to whether this is a recruiting element or not?
I wholeheartedly disagree with that, because having just been on the soil of some of those countries, they're very supportive of what we're doing and trying to stabilize the region. They don't want extreme Islam in their region. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, could it create an uptick? Yeah, sure. But I just don't see how the intelligence agency has actually, in one day, been able to fully assess that's the outcome.
Wow.
Now, is it going to actually, you know, do that thing for the normal, everyday, law-abiding Emirati, Saudi, mm-hmm. Bahraini, Omani? I don't think so. But, yeah, sure, from your extremists, they're looking for any excuse they can get.
Right. Also, and again, in the conversations when they talk about the either the Muslim ban, they don't talk about that the target of this is radical Islam terrorists coming to the country. What can we do to stop their ability to get here? But the media sort of puts a whitewash around it, and the smear is all about Muslims. It's not specifically about Muslims. It's about a select group of Muslims that are coming here to do harm. Back shortly from Chicago.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
The biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv. Back in Chicago, let's go to Kevin listening to us in Austin, Texas on KLBJ. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, I was just going to say the whole, freeze on immigrants is similar. So I grew up in a large Irish Catholic family, 9 kids. Kids would be coming in and out all the time. And then if something happened, it would be like, all right, nobody's having any friends over until we figure out who, did this or that to the house. And I think that's what's going on here. It's just, or if you're driving in a big car, and everybody's yelling and screaming, what does any of us do? We say, stop, be quiet for a second. Let me figure this out. And I think that's what's going on here, just on a national level.
Yeah. No, I think part of that is right, because the other thing is, again, he's only been president for a week. And when they announce these things, they want all things lined up. Now, I would say that they argued on the programs today. Rance Primus made this comment. That one of the reasons why some of the people at TSA and in Homeland Security did not know all the details of this is they didn't want it to leak. They didn't want the word to leak mm-hmm. because someone then could have, rushed ahead and tried to usurp the program. Do you think there's some validity to that?
No, that's ridiculous. I don't know why Rance would say that. Mm-hmm. Because you have to communicate to your frontline people who have boots on the ground about your implementation, because that's your single greatest point of failure. And that, I think, has contributed a lot to the hysteria.
You would be worried about leaks in that?
Absolutely. From a managerial standpoint, you nail it. You absolutely got to get the people who are going to implement the policy have to know the policy forward and backward to implement it fairly and efficiently.
But nobody should be surprised by Trump's announcement because he said up front from the day he was elected,
that's right,
I'm not going to broadcast what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it, and then we'll see what happens afterwards.
Right.
Now, that is a change from the way we've been doing it before. Now, yeah. I'd like to see it work. But I don't know if it's going to work, but I'd like to see it work.
There's also the issue that if I tell you I'm going to implement this 2 weeks from today, that gives 2 weeks where if people, miscreants, didn't want, you know, they could wait or whatever. Now they're going to try to get in that two-week period.
But I may not
tell you when.
But everybody has got to know that it's going to happen and then go through a process where you've put together some sense of it working out, especially when you're the guy who's coming in with the lowest approval ratings of any entering president since we've had these things.
Yep.
So
which
people don't trust you to begin with. Don't exacerbate that by something like this.
I don't think that's the problem. I listen to the media. Every newspaper in this country endorsed Hillary Clinton, and only two newspapers endorsed Donald Trump. So I am not going to listen to the media. I'm not going to listen to their polling. I am not going to listen to any of that stuff. I really want to change because I really do believe that the media fuels the racism. They have Jamal and I on the opposite sides. I'm an Arab who's supporting a tough immigration policy. He's an African-American who has a Muslim-sounding name. We both get mixed up, and we both have the same problem. But the media tells us that he's different from me when the reality is we're both discriminated against. You're discriminated against. I think Trump inadvertently is going to change the way we do things in this country. I don't believe he's intentionally going to do it, but I think he is. What other country
Who's going to give – this gets back to my question. Who's going to give him a chance to do it? Given the tone that we have in this country, who is going to give him a chance for anything?
Why don't all those protesters that are screaming against Trump, why don't they go to the south side of Chicago? Why don't they go and protest about the killings that are there, how the south side of Chicago doesn't get enough money, they don't get enough police, they don't get enough community support? Half those people protesting wouldn't dare go to the south side of Chicago because they're afraid to go there. And you know all this stuff about how they're against racism? They're more racist when the reality sets in. They are not in your community because they would never go there. And when they look at me, they don't look at a white guy. They look at an Arab or a Muslim, and they hate me. Even my own community is sitting there being twisted around by the media. It's very disturbing to me, and I'm hoping that he moderates. I'm hoping that he can pull something off because the old system just doesn't work. It's terrible.
Let's go to calls. Let's go to Mark in Naperville listening to us on WCGO, our flagship. Go ahead.
Hi, Bruce. How you guys doing?
Okay.
Good. I have a question, an overall question and a comment. When the government decides, and I'm really curious about this, that we're going to bring in 100,000 refugees from any country you want to name, but we're now talking about the Middle East countries, how do they decide where they're going to locate them in the various states? Who picks out the community that gets the Syrians or like in, you know, St. Paul, Minnesota, who got the people from Somalia?
I believe, and I believe because we had someone from World Relief on this program based in Wheaton, Illinois, actually a couple of years ago. And those who are in the social service industries who work with the government, they do have relationships with communities in, you know, all over the United States, and there's somewhat of a quota system that I think is used. I don't know what it is, but again, I don't believe it's haphazard. I don't think that you land at O'Hare and you got to find your way out to Naperville or wherever. I think there's a more organized way. There has to be a sponsor, I believe, so that you're going to a sponsoring individual, if not a family or a community or a church, and so there's someone there to welcome you when you get there. I don't think it's haphazard.
Right. I would like that to be a little more transparent so we all understand how it works. That's what my point
okay.
is. And the second thing about pre-announcing this whole move, I don't think that President Trump wanted anybody between Chuck Schumer and a microphone to get stomped on while he ran to it. You know, he didn't want to get anybody hurt there. So.
No, well, I think, he said that during the campaign
that it
always bothered him when he would watch, the Sunday shows and some general would come on and talk about what they're going to do in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Shut your mouth. You shouldn't get the news that way. You just pull the trigger and you pay the consequences. And by the way, let me just say something. I sent this to our producer when we went on the air tonight. For the last, I don't know, 20-plus years, this program has sort of always responded to Sunday morning shows. We've tried to move the needle forward. I think from now on, starting tonight, I think Sunday afternoon, the president's going to be tweeting. He'll be tweeting about the Sunday shows. We'll be reacting to what his tweets are. And again, the battle between he and Lindsey Graham.
That's
and,
why
and
they don't want him tweeting.
They don't. Well, but
yeah,
he gets his message
to stop
out.
Him.
Yeah,
well,
not
Bruce,
stop
however
him.
You however you decide to approach it, it will always be the best. And I really like your show. Thank
well,
you.
Thank you very much. We will try, and that's why the one thing I hope we can do for the next 4 years is to present Sunday night with some civility. Let's go to Austin, Texas. Carol is listening on KLBJ. Go ahead, Carol.
Hello?
Hello, go ahead.
Oh, yes. Yes, I wanted to say something about approval ratings. You know, it's said that Obama has such high approval ratings. Both my husband and I are supporters of Trump. We've contributed, et cetera, et cetera. And I will take one of those surveys on Obama and say I don't approve of anything he did. I have a very valid Gmail address on which I get sent email a bunch, and I send that email a bunch. And after I've answered all these negative things, it says invalid email address. I also think that people that are for Trump don't necessarily admit it. And that's the approval rating situation.
Well, I think there is a belief that one reason the press got it so wrong in terms of their polling and so forth was because so many people were afraid to say they were for Trump. Because,
exactly.
And it also, I this gentleman named Bannon, I don't know much about him. He seems like a loose cannon to me. But he made that comment. He wishes the press would shut up. And mm-hmm. listen, mm-hmm. And that sounds like because it's a spokesperson for the president, as if he's going after the First Amendment rights, which of course he's not doing. He's pretty much, I think, saying you wouldn't have gotten it so wrong had you actually listened to American people. Had you actually gone into Nebraska or Wisconsin or Michigan or parts of Pennsylvania where I'm from and I have family back there and so forth, had you actually listened to these people, you might have known that this was going to happen. So maybe if you stop lecturing us about how to be the perfect citizen that matches what you want and would actually listen to what the people have to say, you might actually report a better news cycle than what we get.
And I would say that the media isn't alone in that sort of behavior.
Oh,
I think both parties are equally guilty of that. The Tea Party arose because the Republican establishment wasn't listening
yes,
to the anger that was bubbling in the base. The Democrats, I'm going to say hopefully, will now take another look at their base on the progressive side more mm-hmm. than anything, more than the Hillary Clinton-led centrist, and see that progressives have something to say. It's what Bernie was talking about. And if you want to discount Bernie Sanders, okay, that's fine, but you do it at your peril.
Yeah,
because
you don't
he
no
got
about
it.
Him. Yes.
Exactly. There's no question about it.
I think Carol's exactly
I think the
right.
other point, Carol, is that, and this is sort of a social thing, is that the people certainly in the national news media, not only are they based in New York or Washington, they live in an insular community. But also, I mean, their backgrounds, basically, I mean, their friends are like-minded friends. They do the same things. They go to the same schools. So, you know, for them to say, you could have asked someone in late October, do you know anybody who's a blue-collar worker? Do you know anybody that comes home with dirty hands? Do you know anybody that wears a flannel shirt and goes to the tavern and drinks beer and watches football on a Saturday night? They may not know any of those people, or they don't go into the south side of Chicago and walk into any whether it's a pool room or anything. They don't know from that area because they're too insular. They're at the cocktail parties. They're going to their comfortable homes, whether it's in Washington or right outside in Virginia. They don't get a sense. So they're shocked. And Kelly Conway said something today which I thought was all three of the major, Lawrence Priebus was on, and also Sean Spicer. They were all on that day. But Kelly Conway said to Chris Wallace, since the election, none of the pundits, none of the people on the network news shows that were absolutely wrong, they all have jobs. No one was fired. All the people that missed the biggest story of the last 50 years, none of them lost their jobs in a company that would not happen. I thought she hit the nail right on the head. Back shortly.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through February, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Back in Chicago, thanks very much for joining us. One of the other issues that came up this week was Donald Trump also commented about the growing violence in the city of Chicago, suggesting that if the city doesn't get its act together, he may have to send in the feds. Again, sort of the opposition and the media all kind of overreacted. Oh, they're going to send in federal troops, blah, blah, blah. And there weren't demonstrations, but there was almost a uniformity of alarm that Donald Trump had once again, more than any other politician in the history of this country, put crime and Chicago on the front page because of what he did, using the bully pulpit that he now has. Jamal, I want to come to you. Jamal Cole, this is your pet topic. Mm-hmm. Your pet topic is the violence that takes place in Chicago and what can happen to it. Mm-hmm. When the president-elect uses that bully pulpit to put a spotlight on Chicago, in your view, is that good or bad?
I think he's wrong when he says that he can fix violence in Chicago in a week. And I think that because there's no copy-pastable solution to gun violence.
Is he wrong by saying that it should be focused on?
I don't think anybody agrees. I think you should talk about the root causes of violence. I mean, the root causes of violence are divested communities of color. There's under-resourced schools and there's poverty. So when he talks about violence,
broken families,
that's
too many people in prison.
I think that
disrespect for law and order. Would you all those things included?
Segregation would be included. I would include a few more things. I think Chicago is one of the most segregated cities in the U.S. The distinction between the black, the white, and Hispanic neighborhoods is so visible, and that's caused these diverging on these separate community areas. That racial division is important, not only because it signifies a lack of cultural integration in our city, but segregation in Chicago has created socioeconomic isolation and exclusion in which minorities, specifically African Americans, have higher vulnerability to poverty and crime. I think, you know, again, my comments aren't based upon.
Who is to blame for that, in your view?
I think that oppression is real. It's a structural part of our country and its history.
But who did it?
I think it was created intentionally, and I think nowadays it's been cloaked up in these trumped up laws and this false media. And I think people have a hard time recognizing how injustice is being sustained.
Who did it?
I think the mindset is that what can you do about it? It's not always about throwing fingers at who did this, who does that. How can I view democracy from a community level outward as opposed from this federal level inward?
But would you acknowledge that if victims, I'll use the word, the overall, if there
we're
are
not victims, we've been victimized.
Are you victims or victimized? Are you both?
I think we've been victimized. I don't think we wallow in our iniquity and say we're victims, but I do think you have to say we've been victimized by a system of oppression in the United States. Was it a political party? I think. What a political party that victimizes
the situation that you're talking about in Chicago and
yes.
other large cities in the United States? Is there one political party that's been responsible for those cities that has perpetuated that treatment that you've just described?
That's both. It's both parties. They're both responsible.
Why? And how?
Okay, so look at public housing, for example. In 1965, I want to say, when the Brook Amendment was passed, Senator Brook from Massachusetts, that devastated families in public housing because it said men couldn't reside in public housing.
Terrible. Yeah.
That was a Republican senator that got the Burke Amendment passed. The Republican Party has to bear some responsibility in that.
Okay.
Democrats, public housing in Chicago, because I wrote my dissertation for my PhD a really long time ago about public housing in Chicago, was constructed, at least the high-rise portion of it, by Mayor Richard J. Daley, largely to control and isolate African-American votes to protect the bungalow belts throughout the city. The Democratic Party and the Republican Party have contributed both to the condition. And so the pointing fingers to say, well, they did it more. No, they're both responsible. Now let's move away from the responsibility to say, how do we correct the issue?
So a question that I would ask then of Jamal is, you need better schools. Mm-hmm. You need more involvement. You need more investment in the city to give African Americans a greater opportunity to make their lives better. Would you acknowledge that? And if so, where does that money come from?
I think we should start going to school thinking about how we can develop skills people are willing to pay for or start our own jobs. But when it goes back to violence, I think that different homicides are driven by different neighborhood and individual factors. And we always hear about New York and how they were able to lower homicide over, you know, from 1990 to 2015. I don't think we should be using a city's homicide rate as a reflection of success or failure at reducing gun violence. I think we should be looking at individual programs within communities and seeing if those programs are effective. If so, can they be expanded into broader strategies? Like my program, My Block, My Hood, My City, what I have found is that the majority of teenagers in Chicago have never been downtown. They've never been to the lake. They've never, their entire worldview, what they think is possible for themselves and their friends is geographically constricted to the infrastructure of their neighborhood. And that reality poses significant limitations for some teenagers in Chicago. And conversely, it provides super opportunities for other people. So if we're going to be serious about all teenagers having a fair shot, we need to deal with that inequality. It's a poverty of imagination almost.
I was a little disappointed and surprised, and I think that Trump has done us a favor coming from Chicago and the Chicago area. I think putting Chicago on the pedestal is a good thing. It has everybody talking about it. Yeah. If we can keep it from being politicized, it might end up doing some good. But I was always disappointed. And I knew Barack Obama. He's from the south side of Chicago. He even knew the Arab community very well. Mm-hmm. I'm just surprised during his 8 years in office, he didn't do that more. Did we not see it? Or did he do it or
could
did he not do it?
Could he really, without receiving the criticism of, oh, why are you just focusing on where you're from? Aren't there problems everywhere else? I mean, the guy was getting hit every day. From day one, when Mitch McConnell said, my job is to make you a one-term president.
I think you're giving him an excuse here.
No, but that was a big criticism.
I understand that.
Yeah.
He had the bully pulpit of the presidency. He used the bully pulpit of the presidency to weigh in on issues relating to race that took place in other parts of the country, including Ferguson. And yet he did not use the bully pulpit of the presidency to weigh in on people in his own senatorial district that were getting murdered. He could have done more. So, again, we're not going to talk about the rearview mirror. That's done. We're talking about what we do next. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back with more. Don't go away. The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Hey everybody, this is Josh Groban. After so many years on the stage, one of my favorite things about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while one in five children may be left not knowing where their next meal is coming from, or if it's even coming at all. Thankfully, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food and helps deliver it to kids in need across the country. but they can't do it alone. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Back in Chicago, and let's go call. So let's go to Craig in McKinleyville, California. Craig, where is McKinleyville, California?
Close to Eureka, California.
Okay, so way up north in the Golden State.
Yes.
How can we help you?
I'm trying to get this straight. You're advocating a position that the federal government, the powerful federal government, should implement policies haphazardly without taking into account any of the collateral damage it causes. You guys sound insane to me.
No, I don't think I said haphazardly. Did I say plan them haphazardly?
I said it was haphazard.
They implemented them haphazardly.
Yes.
They didn't take into account collateral damage that could cause. They didn't tell their frontline people what they were doing. That's haphazard.
Yeah, but where are the casualties? Are the casualties within the U.S.? Political, or I know we're not talking about people being killed. But where are the costs being borne?
Green card holders, people who are actually legally allowed to be here, plus our Iraqi translator. Thing is, they are never going to trust us, ever, again.
If that's the kind of damage that I'm concerned about.
I think that they're addressing that. I honestly think that they are addressing that issue of the green card holders, and I think they're kind of backing up a little bit on that. But I got to tell you, the people in the immigration industry, I think, knew exactly what he was doing and didn't need to be told what he was going to do. I think that industry, ICE, I think immigration, I think Department of Homeland Security, I think they're all have a consensus that they needed to target these seven failed states because that was a big problem for them, in addition to dealing with the unrestrained immigration on our southern border with Mexico.
Maybe I'm being too, academic or too economic here. You've got to think of costs and benefits. And the fact that there could be a couple people who are unfairly treated by this particular law, that is going to happen no matter who does it, no matter how good the intentions. If the overall, however, gives us more security on the border that protects more Americans, there's going to be a few people who get ground up in the system. There's no doubt that that's going to happen. I think what you're expecting is perfection, and it isn't going to ever happen. It's just not going to happen.
It's not going to happen in government, that's for sure.
Not going to happen in government.
No, and I guess that's the – I would hope that my Republican friends would see that with Obamacare as they're repealing and – maybe
I hope they do too. But at the same time, I could be one of those. My son has Obamacare. You know how much his premium went up this past year? 107%. The year before, 43%. The year before that, 25%. So, I mean, if you wanted to look at this one person's son, has Obamacare been affordable to that person? The answer is no. So that's the way, the whole system has to be thrown away.
We're going to move on. Amy in Austin, Texas on KLBJ. Go ahead, Amy.
Hi, guys. I feel like the reason people like me who protested on Saturday, you know, the Women's March, and people who didn't vote for Donald Trump, just cannot get behind him, and now even, you know, you see all the protests today, is because there's a lack of compassion coming from him. I feel like he's still, you know, rallying his election, and he's not talking to all of us. That's how I feel, and I feel that.
Amy,
you know,
let me, if I can just interject for 1 second, I'll give you the last word.
Thing to say, and it's not terrible or anything against him, but it's
no, just, no. But Amy, listen to what I'm going to say, and then I'm going to give you the last word. There can be some compassion, but the people that I've heard Donald Trump be compassionate about are the parents whose children have, or husband or wife, were murdered by illegal immigrants. He brought them before the Republican convention. There are literally scores of people who have been killed by illegal immigrants. He now wants to have a monthly report on the devastation that they provide to citizens of this country. I have seen him in a compassionate mode with those victims. Now, you don't see those victims on TV like you did the victims of other crimes in America. You don't see that. But they're real.
And there
are hundreds of them, if not thousands of them over the last several years, and you don't see those people. Donald Trump is compassionate towards those people, and all he's saying is we want to make sure that those that are coming to the country illegally stop. He doesn't want them coming here illegally anymore. Now,
okay,
you may view that as uncompassionate.
That.
I view that as compassionate for American citizens whose loved ones have been murdered.
I agree with that. I mean,
good.
I saw those people on television, but you're not going to change my mind about his level of compassionability. I mean, come on, let's be real. He gets it there. He's very combative. And so he, okay, for all of us living on Earth, the way I look at it, we are who we surround ourselves with. We have a man that just said Bannon, shut up media. Not that I agree with the media all the time, believe me. I feel like, you know, the one thing I agree with Kellyanne Conway is when she did say, why do they have their jobs? I'm right. A liberal independent. Nobody listened to us. But for me, he's got Kellyanne Conway also spewing lies. It's lies. No one trusts him. He's unhinged at this point. That's it's just beyond me now.
Amy, I'm glad you called. I hope you'll call again. Because as I said at the beginning of the program, we live in two Americas. There is the America who lives in the electoral college states, and your vote counted. Then there's the broader number of people who live in non-electoral college states. Your vote counted as well. It just doesn't count as much as those who the Constitution says decides who the next president is. And those are the people who got what they wanted on Election Day. They gave the keys to the kingdom to President Trump. And we all have to live in this world, but we have to live in a world knowing that there is a reality that we're dealing with. Donald Trump is going to be president of the United States for the next 4 years, or maybe Mike Pence, but someone of that political persuasion is going to be president of the United States. Get over it.
What are you working with, Madonna?
But the thing is, Bruce, what you just said with folks who are sort of opposed is where was the get over it when McConnell attacked Obama early in his?
If you want
to be resistant, I get it.
There were not people opposed to Obama that were shutting down airports,
no.
Having 4 million people show up and complain about him. You know what the story? You know what the story was? Let me refresh you because you're a smart guy. You know what the story was when Barack Obama got elected? The story was: look how many white people in America overlooked color and they elected him as the first black president, you know, African American president. That's what people were celebrating. People were not marching in the streets because they disagreed with Barack Obama. Now, what you're talking about politically.
That's what I'm talking about.
All right, politically, believe me, I am no fan of Mitch McConnell's. He says things that are stupid. He should not have said that.
Yep.
He shouldn't have said the thing that there was never going to be a vote on Merrick Garland. Stupid things.
Yep.
He creates political opposition. I am not a fan of him. But let's put it in context. The difference between how America reacted to Barack Obama and how they reacted to Donald Trump, night and day, and that's why we're doing this show on the second Sunday of his administration, and we literally have thousands of people demonstrating at America's airport.
Is
back shortly, I got to pause. 1-800-723-8289.
Historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school. Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
To it. That Bruce show's Dumont, you Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Professor, ooh. you're just waiting for Donald Trump to say something and then apologize for it. It ain't going
to
happen.
I don't
it
want him to apologize.
He is in the house.
I want him to say things that have been thought through beyond a fifth grade level.
There is no filter between his brain and his mouth.
Exactly.
And those of us have been saying that for a year, though,
when we were off there, that the media wants conflict. They don't
Absolutely.
Want us to resolve everything. They want the conflict. They want Trump to beat them up. They want Trump
that's
to
right.
attack them. Because
but where
that's
there isn't conflict, they will make conflict.
That's why I said, you know, several months ago on this program, the biggest challenge that he's going to have is the Republican members of the Senate. Because there's a whole group of people there that do not like him, including John McCain, including Lindsey Graham, who took a swipe at him today. They took another swipe back at him today. The would-be presidents, as he said, that seem to be more concerned about starting World War III. There isn't a microphone that John McCain doesn't want to seduce, and he brings his little...
He's like the Roman Puchinsky of national
politics. He's the Roman Puchinsky. That's, you bring him, you bring his little...
I love Roman. He was a good guy.
I know. His little, what can I say?
Too local politics, sorry.
Brings Lindsey Graham with him, okay.
Yes.
All right, let's go to Carl in Knoxville, Tennessee, listening to us on KNOX. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good evening, fellas. How y'all doing?
Okay, thanks for calling.
A couple examples I want to give you all on what I'm dealing with here in Tennessee, and then I want you guys to tell me how much more egregious President Trump's going to be. Guess I have the good fortune in Tennessee of having the richest governor in the United States and Governor Bill Haslam presiding over the one of the poorest states. Governor Haslam's family owns Pilot Oil, and there's actually some irony in this phone call because one of the things that the state's dealing with, he's basically going to privatize state jobs on state universities and national park or state parks. Through a company that's based, a multinational company that's based up in your own neck of the woods called Jones Lang LaSalle.
Okay.
And among other things such as that, the governor's family and his brother that owns Cleveland Browns got found guilty of basically stealing from small trucking companies and had to pay a 10% fine. I could go on and on. So tell me when Donald Trump has a long history. How much more egregious is he going to be against entrepreneurs and small business, like-minded guys like myself? What am I going to have to look forward to in policy from him when I see guys like Steve Manchin in the confirmation hearings, some of the twisted turns those guys took? Tell me why I'm going to have to
All
look
right,
forward
let's
to.
Let Mike Miller respond, the voice of Goldman Sachs. Not that you are, but...
You know, my training is in economics, and I'm a macroeconomist. And one thing we do know is that the engine of a capitalism is entrepreneurship. It's that drive for what we call economic profit that leads people to make the better product at a lower price. And the number one source of jobs in the country, new jobs, not jobs that last a long time, but new jobs, is startups. And I was hoping that Mr. Trump, from the very beginning, would focus upon that particular aspect. What he's doing, of course, is he's trying to control businesses, saying you can't go overseas and so forth. That's nice, and there's a few thousand jobs being saved by large corporations. But the key is to embrace entrepreneurship, and that's entrepreneurship across the board. So you could do that. That can be across race. That can be across culture, across religion. And if we could just get more people to take more chances to get the government off their backs and let them be more entrepreneurial. You would think that Mr. Trump would know that. I know he's a billionaire and he's a big real estate mogul, but he has to recognize the importance of small business in generating growth in this economy. And I'm hoping that he's going to turn his attention to that, and the sooner the better.
I would have a question for you then. Isn't part of the sort of slowdown in startups a concentration of capital? Because it seems like after the bailout, banks got the large banks, the five large banks, got a record profits and all that, but they're not lending money anymore. That seems to be a problem beyond his control.
It is. And see, part of what you have, money would come from two places, come from the banks, and then it would come also from venture capitalists. Now, the banks, of course, would be very concerned about putting out loans which are riskier, which means they have to have more capital held in the bank, and there's regulations that would make it actually more expensive for them to lend to small businesses. So, and there's no doubt that some lending into these businesses, if it were freed up more, it would cause more economic growth.
Let's go to Tom in Youngstown, Ohio, listening to us on WKBN. Go ahead, Tom.
Another interesting program, Bruce.
Thank you.
You know, I would like to see the, instead of the airport protests, I'd like to see the media replay the decapitations and the suicide bombings and the other carnage in the Middle East and Europe to remind us why Trump is doing what he's doing. I'd like to see them investigate who's funding
the
protesters.
Tom, that would be just so messy. That would be so difficult for people having to deal with that.
Well, and I'd like to see
that would turn people's stomach.
Well, but you know, Bruce, it would remind us that we are at war and why he's doing this. Also, I think I'd like to see them who's investigated, who's funding the protesters. And if these refugee resettlements are targeted politically to change red states and purple states to blue or more solid blue. And then finally, I'm the hypocrisy of Chuck Schumer and the Democrats, not even a whimper on Obama. His cancellation of the wet foot, dry foot policy, so the Cubans can come here as immigrants. But, of course, the majority of them would be Republicans. I know Ann Coulter, Bruce, had stated, and I don't know if this figure is right or not, that approximately 80% of the immigrants since 1970 have voted Democrat. You sort of know the reason why they want no wall on the southern border and why they want to bring in all these refugees and all the rest of it.
Well, I think your point, your initial point about protests, I do believe probably the majority of people who are protesting at the airports and have protested since Donald Trump has been elected, I think the majority of them are probably dedicated people who really want to become a political opposition. But there is a percentage, and I don't know what the percentage is, there's a percentage of them that are being... They may be agent provocateurs. They may be getting funding from whether it's George Soros or MoveOn.org. They are professional organizers. The ones that disrupted the inauguration are anarchists, over 200 of them anarchists. They're there to create disturbance, and they're looters and they're rioters, and they're the same type of people that show up, you know, when the Bulls win a basketball championship, although it's been several years, or the Pistons, whatever it is.
Fingers crossed.
There are those that take advantage of situations, and they are lawbreakers. And in this particular case, there's a percentage of people that are out there. When you start smashing windows and tipping over police cars and torching a limousine, you go well beyond a political protest. But there's a percentage that's out there. And also we have to remember a story, not a terribly well-reported story from the campaign. And that was when a Chicago-based guy happens to be someone that we all know in this area, he was involved in creating some of the rioting and some of the disturbances, or disturbances that turned into riots and physical altercations. Bob Creamer is his name. He's married to Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, who was leading the efforts at the airport last night. So I want to find out, to what extent did MoveOn.org and George Soros and all those that were vehemently opposed to Donald Trump during the campaign, is that apparatus still in place? Are they going to become a permanent resistance? And are they going to create havoc, protests? Are they going to mix with real live, you know, dedicated protesters? But are they out there for one political purpose? And you're right. It's a political purpose to delegitimize the president, make life miserable. And by shutting down an airport, I don't know how that makes anyone feel that they're gaining public support by doing it.
Yeah, there's also the issue that when he started off, he was talking about what was happening in Europe. There are parts of Sweden. The Sweden I believe, is thinking of stopping the refugees from coming in because it's so fracturing the country. And, of course, what happened in Cologne, Germany, about a year ago, and they tried their damnedest to cover it up so that it didn't appear that all of the perpetrators were from one community. I think there's a lot going on, and we know what happens, of course, in France, that there are no-go places, both in France and London and so forth, where the police simply don't go there.
Mm-hmm. Especially in Paris.
And Paris is the worst, and yeah. It's becoming that way now in Sweden and parts of Germany. If Americans were more aware of the communities which are being created by these refugees who refuse to, in a sense, try to become German or become Swedish and so forth, you would understand why some Americans are trying to keep the refugees to come in the front door after we vet them.
And, Tom, just to put a underscore the initial point, the media is not going to show those type of videos. They're not going to show them. They're too distasteful to the American people. They don't want to rile the American people up and remind them of what happened, not only on 9/11. They don't even show the 9/11 pictures anymore, even on the anniversaries. These are indelibly etched, you know, images. But again, there's a whole generation, including Jamal, who's here this evening. He hasn't seen that video.
I've seen it. I've also seen a video of Trayvon Martin. You know, I've also seen a video of people being shot down with 16 shots. So you talk about vetting, but is it racial profiling? I think there's a lot of people that
we've seen a lot of those pictures. Okay,
I've seen those.
And, you know, but you cannot compare, in my view, those pictures compared to having someone beheaded. Trayvon Martin was a horrible story. Michael Brown was a horrible story. They're different than beheadings.
Laquan McDonald was shot down 16. I mean, he got shot 16 times.
It's horrible.
That's both of them horrible, and both of them. And there was ample video support, just like
and
in both
so,
cases.
So are decapitations.
I've seen videos, but I'm not saying one's worse than the other.
Not very often.
I think white collar crime hurts the country a lot more than gun violence in Chicago too. Look at these large pharmaceutical companies.
Can I just hear you say that white collar crime hurts America
and
more?
It takes
than
a lot
black
more
crime?
From a lot more people than gun violence in Chicago. With a gun, there's thousands of people that are affected. But in the bank bailouts in 2008, thousands, I mean, so many people lost their lives and their livelihood because they couldn't pay back the debt to the banks that got the bailout money.
Tom, we got to go back shortly from Chicago.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
The biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv. Bruce Fremont back in Chicago. It has been a whirlwind first week for Donald Trump with executive orders that were passed out. And here's some of the things that he ticked off just this first week. He had a busy week. He wants to start taking apart Obamacare. That got a lot of publicity. A freeze on regulations. Health aid and abortion. He wants to cut the aid to nations that support abortion. Withdrawal from the TPP. Federal hiring freeze, the Dakota Access Pipeline, the Keystone XL Pipeline, and he wants to attack sanctuary cities. That's a big one. Could affect us here in Chicago. He wants to build the border wall. That got a lot of publicity. Of course, extreme vetting is what we've been talking about this evening. And again, a buildup of the military. Mike, I want to get your reaction to the TPP decision.
I'm much more in favor of free trade than he is. I'm not a big fan of the government picking winners and losers. Mr. Obama did that with Solyndra and places like that. Mr. Trump is now starting to do it in terms of saying, if you keep your business here, I'm going to treat you well and so forth. So I'm not a big fan of some of his economic policy from that perspective. At the same token, he also has made some good overtures with regard to tax policy that could be very positive for economic growth and regulation. As long as you weigh costs and benefits, this would make a big difference. So, but I think he made a mistake on TPP.
Isn't the TPP thing something that the Democrats wanted? I mean, here he
Bernie
is being
Sanders,
a Democrat.
Bernie Sanders said he liked that idea.
Trump,
Bernie
I think, Sanders. Is, you know, I mean, Trump is an enigma, I think. I don't know if we can really call him a Republican or a conservative. I think he's getting more support from the Republicans than he is from the Democrats. Well, but I think deep down, this guy could be a centrist if he could just get out of this situation where it's all controversy. Yeah.
He's going to have more problems with the Republicans and the Democrats. And a year from now, the story is going to be how much the Republicans
agree with
him. Do you think Schumer will be defending him in a year?
No.
I don't think where we are. No Democrat can defend him.
No.
Because
however,
politically,
Democrats running for re-election to the United States Senate
support
from states that Donald Trump won, they are possibly gettable people.
Yeah.
Joe Manchin of West Virginia, some of these people could even switch parties because they're not speaking for their national party anymore because the party is likely to go left, I think. I don't think the party is going to go back to a central point. I think it's going to swing further left. You'd like it to swing.
I want the progressives in my party to be heard more than the corporatist centrists like Hillary Clinton. I think that issues of social justice, for example, are important, right? And it doesn't have to come down to, oh, well, we have to pay for that. Sometimes it's not about the money.
Can you defend one of the things that will get a lot of publicity and get a lot of flack this week, his wanting to end 400 cities and counties, sanctuary cities? He's asked the Department of Homeland Security to come up with a report on the number of crimes that take place in those municipalities. Can you defend federal aid to sanctuary cities, Phil?
I think you have to look at what the law says around sort of like if you were getting community development block grants, for example. If there's nothing in the legislation that says I can take this money if you're a sanctuary city, then he's violating the law, essentially. Get his party to change the law in order to impose.
What about dollars for police?
However that money's allocated, does it say in the law that you can do that? That's the part about governance that's really important.
Let's look at it philosophically then. Both of us are academics. Do you think a state or a city should be allowed to choose which federal laws they're going to enforce and which ones they're going to nullify or ignore? See, I don't believe you can do that. It would destroy the rule of law.
Haven't we already done that with the marijuana legalization across the
country? I understand. That's why they should legalize it across the country. That I agree. But let's go back into the rise of the civil rights movement. If the federal government didn't go in and say, we are going to put troops there and we are going to enforce the federal law and there is going to be desegregation.
Right.
If we had sanctuary cities at that time who would say, I'm not going to live up to the federal government's law, you would, and I, both of us, would have been outraged at it. My fear with sanctuary cities is this will violate or destroy the rule of law. You're absolutely right about that his power over the money going to those locations. Everything I've read makes it pretty clear he has very little he can do. But philosophically, you must agree, I hope, that you cannot have a location deciding which federal laws they will enforce and which ones they will not.
But we do that already. How about all these states that put in voter ID laws to take away voting rights, which are enshrined?
The states run elections.
But the Voting Rights Act is a federal law that states are supposed to follow. And by enacting this kind of legislation, they're not doing it.
Should those states that violate federal voting rights laws, should they have federal funds pulled from them?
I don't know that it's about a funds issue as much as it is about whatever the penalties are for enforcement.
I'm focusing on funds now because we're talking about federal funds. We have the mayor of the city of Chicago saying that Chicago is a sanctuary city and he's going to keep it a sanctuary city. If the taxpayers of Chicago knew that every single federal dollar that was coming to Chicago was going to be cut off, there might be a new mayor in Chicago.
I don't know. This is Chicago, after all.
What do you say to Trump?
Is clearly playing politics with this issue because he knows that the sanctuary cities are in areas that are predominantly Democratic, he believes.
Right.
And I think wrongly that they voted against him. And I think Trump is making a mistake. I think that would be a backlash to punish entire municipalities and cities for something that I think could turn around on him. When you look at some of the sanctuary cities, what is it really?
Selma was a sanctuary city.
Exactly.
It was Selma, Alabama was a sanctuary city.
But what I'm saying is the reality of a sanctuary city comes down to this. Do the police stop people and ask, are you a citizen? And just because they don't ask somebody, are you a citizen, and that's the reality of that sanctuary city policy, I think, doesn't mean that they're doing something that's contributing to the lawlessness of the country. So I disagree with him on that position of sanctuary cities. I think that punishing them and taking away their federal funding only damages the country more and causes more problems for us. I think he needs to take a different approach.
I'd like to see you try that again.
No,
go back to Selma. I'd love you to see if only they had imposed such costs on Selma.
I think his approach to immigration is the right thing. Mm-hmm. I think we need to be tougher with immigration. I think we need to get a handle on immigration. Once before, we provided an amnesty. We allowed everybody to stay in. We said that was going to resolve it. And what, 10 years later, we have the same problem again. Mm-hmm. I think he needs to address that. And if he addresses it, then we don't need sanctuary cities.
But if you are the mayor of a municipality and you choose that you're going to violate federal law, you are sending a signal to your constituents that, you know what, here's a law. Maybe you don't have to follow all the laws.
I agree, Bruce.
We're not going to follow this law.
I don't think it's seen that way. I don't think people are looking at it that way.
I think it's seen that way by a lot of people because the other question is why are we focusing on looking at people that have come to this country illegally?
Well,
by the way, wait. They came to the country illegally. They broke a law when they came to the country.
I agree
now,
with you.
Yes. They may have come to this country and build lives and become very productive, and they're great workers now. And I would say right now, leave those people alone. Leave them alone. Now, what Trump has said, and Trump has said he's going to leave those people alone.
He has.
What he has said is, if there's someone that's come to this country illegally, and while they were here, they became a gangbanger or a drug dealer or whatever the case may be. They may have violated a law. Then we're going to go after them and we're going to throw them. We're going to send them back to their countries. And if their countries don't want them, we're going to cut off their federal aid.
Sanctuary cities don't prevent police from arresting an individual who happens to be a non-citizen who commits a crime.
But
they get prosecuted.
Absolutely.
They get arrested.
They get thrown out.
INS comes and grabs people all the time. They do that.
The case that has brought this to the people's attention was the Kate Steinle in San Francisco. The man was in custody because he violated the law. It was found out that he was five times he had been deported. The federal government asked that he be held. And because they're a sanctuary city, they said, no, we're not going to hold him. They let him go, and he ended up shooting this woman in the head.
San Francisco
and she's dead.
Is probably one of the most liberal and of all sanctuary cities in the United States.
That's right. The violation. Had they lived up and said, we will hold him until you get here.
I don't think that problem
that,
is...
That young woman would still be alive. You know,
I don't think that's a problem
in
Chicago.
I think what we're going to find out now that the crime statistics are being asked, the president has asked for the Department of Homeland Security, which didn't even know they had to keep those records. Once those be... And they're going to be kind of a weekly report of people who are here illegally who've committed crimes, then I think there is going to be a constituency of people, as our caller said, where is the president's compassion? When the American people learn the people who have been victims of crimes, including Kate Steinle, when they learn these stories, I think, you know, I think they are going to be outraged. I think that's part of the outrage that led to Donald Trump's election in the first place, because people bought that story.
Yeah, but I'm going to need to also see the larger context that those numbers appear in. Because if you just give me a number without a context, then I don't have any way to...
The
context is crime as a whole. So if you're talking about there's 1,000 offenders and 5 of them are illegal immigrants, that's very different than there's 1,000 offenders and 500 of them are illegal immigrants.
To me, it's 500.
I need to know that.
It's 5 too many.
Yeah, but you have 5, but let's also put context. What if the total number that would be of the 100... 5 were illegal immigrants. What if illegal immigrants only make up 6 of the entire 100? Then it's 80% of all
Then we need
that's
to
where the
but
context.
We need to know all of that context.
That's right. But I
and not just a single number of how many, but how many.
But for
of
the last 30 years, the last 30 years, those statistics have been buried because nobody wanted to talk about them, and Donald Trump is talking about them. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for being with us tonight.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through February, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts. Now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Jamal, a question to you. My block, my hood, my city. That's your organization. What do you do?
Well, while volunteering at Cook County Jail and talking with teenagers there, I realized that... They could see downtown from their block, but they had never been there. So what I do is I take teenagers from under-resourced communities on educational field trips. So you ask a teenager now, what do you want to be? They say, I want to be a rapper or a basketball player, because that's what everybody around them is or wants to do. Well, I take that same teenager to Gatorade and talk about consumer engagement. Now we expose them to a new job opportunity they never knew existed. So I can't afford to take kids to China, but I can take them to Chinatown, you know? I can't afford to take them to Poland, but I can take them to Jefferson Park. We can't go to India, but I can take them to Divine Avenue. I personally believe you can travel the world without leaving Chicago. And exposure is key, especially if these kids are going to be making decisions about, you know, what they want to be in the future. So.
Now, do they go on a bus? I mean, is it?
Yeah, I got a 15-passenger van. So I pick up, you know, I work with 5 different level 3 schools in Chicago. And once per month, I take 15 kids that have lower than 80% attendance in that school on an educational field trip. And I see if the power of travel impacts their attendance. Does it lower their in-school suspension rates? Do they feel more connected to Chicago? So that's what my block, my
city
is.
What age group? What, are they in high school? All high school?
High school, yep, between 14 and 18. Yep. And we'll be working with Sen High School, who has Syrian refugees, and we'll be exposing them to different parts of Chicago as well.
And you're going to come down and visit the museum in a couple of weeks.
We are looking forward to it. Thank you.
Let's go to Austin, Texas, KLBJ. You are a sanctuary city, Joe. How are you?
Yeah, guys. Austin is a sanctuary city. And, you know, my daughter has been in an auto accident with an illegal, uninsured, no consequences for the illegal. Of course, we ended up having to pay for all the damages. I mean, in Texas, you just, in your driver's license, or I mean, your auto insurance, you need to have uninsured motorists because there are so many illegals driving around recklessly, and there are no consequences for them. And especially like drunk driving, I think half the crime in Austin is probably committed by illegals, but they won't tell us about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the city council is pro illegal immigrant, and so they don't want us to know that.
So is Chicago, and so is probably the only city that I know is, I think Miami has said that the mayor of Miami has said that he's going to turn his back on the sanctuary city.
Well, Illinois has a program where illegal immigrants are allowed to get driver's licenses as long as they meet the requirements to also have insurance.
Right.
They have to do that. So I don't know about Texas, whether they do that, but isn't an illegal alien the same as a citizen when it comes to being responsible
driver's license,
car crash?
No.
I think so.
They don't do anything?
No.
They don't arrest them? I mean, forget about the fact that he's an illegal alien.
Civil,
he was a driver, and he should have been arrested.
No,
right.
It's just an accident. It's not a criminal.
Joe, what's going to happen? I think in the next several months, there's going to be a lot more stories about sanctuary cities, and we're going to learn a lot more about them, whether you're a city council people in Austin want you to know about it or not. Thanks for your call, Tony. Let's head way west, Vancouver, Washington. What a great part of the country, Tony. You're listening to us on KUFO. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Yeah. Hey, President Trump has the ability, to be the greatest president of all time. He's a true independent. He's hated by the Democrats. He's not liked by the Republicans. They did everything to derail his campaign.
Right.
On the major issues of immigration and Obamacare, he needs to get Paul Ryan and Nancy Pelosi, especially on immigration, he needs to get those two together and say, I want an equal number of Democrats, equal number of Republicans to iron out a bill that has meat on the bone, including, about the southern border, about the influx of refugees from terrorist nations. And I want it on my desk in 90 days, or you see what the option is going to be. It's going to be my option. And this is going to get people complain about Congress and the Senate not doing anything. That's how you get them to do something.
Tony, I wish I could agree with you, but I just don't think that given this political climate, you're going to get Democrats, and there's a lot of Republicans you're not going to get as well with that type of approach. I mean, Nancy Pelosi is not going to be concerned about a tough anti-immigration policy for the United States. I mean, look, I mean, Kate Steinle was killed in her city. I mean, where have you heard her speak on those issues? It's just they're not going to do it because to be hard on illegal immigration is perceived to be hard on minorities, primarily Hispanics, and the Democrats need Hispanics to win elections.
But that's how you deflect some of the blame off of you when you offer it to Congress. You say Congress doesn't do anything. I'm offering them a chance to do something, or it's going to be my way.
Oh, I think Donald Trump is going to go the other. I think he's going to give the executive action and throw it to Congress and say, you don't like it, fix it.
I just hope you're not going to go the way that Barack Obama would do, and when he used the executive orders because he said Congress didn't move fast enough. I was against it then, and I would be against Mr. Trump doing that. One thing you do not want is an imperial president.
I agree.
You want a strong Congress. That's what you need.
Absolutely.
And John in South Bend, Indiana, go ahead. Last caller of the night.
Yeah, the teacher who has the kids getting exposed in Chicago doing the field trip sounds like a perfect plan. In my classroom, I've got Syrian and Iraqi refugee, and I wonder if we had a registry of how hard these kids work and the grades they get in classrooms and compare that to domestic-born students, if that might enlighten people as well. Because I think their grades
are
pretty high.
Yeah, we do actually. We're in the next semester. We're going to be using video chatting features, so kids from Red Hook Projects in Brooklyn can talk with kids from North Lawndale, and they can talk about the assets of each other's community. What are the hidden gem businesses? What are the local elected officials? What are the faith based organizations? And they will be traveling out to each other's communities to do service projects. Yes, I think isolation, again, leads to narrow-mindedness, regardless of where, what part of the country. And I went to school in Wayne, Nebraska, so that's pretty isolated.
How did you like Nebraska?
I loved it. I mean, I met people from all over the country. They, you know, a kid that grows up in Inglewood, when you see him downtown Chicago, you say, wow, his vernacular is different. He dresses different. Well, a kid that grows up in a farm town in Iowa, their vernacular is different. They dress different. But when they're exposed to different people like myself, they become more well-rounded Americans. I loved it.
Okay, listen, thanks for a minute. That's Jamal Cole, one of our guests this evening. Also, Philip Beverly from Chicago State University, Mike Miller from DePaul University, and Ray Hanania, author of the book, I'm Glad I Look Like a Terrorist and Arabs of Chicagoland. I'm Glad I Look Like a Terrorist. Go look that book up.
Book.
We thank you very much for being with us tonight. Our thanks to Colin Bobbitt and Dan Dorfman and Fritz Goldman for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago. The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. 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 Discounts for groups of 20 or more.